everyone to the next in our series of podcasts on successful women in leadership. Today I have the absolute honor of having Shelley Sun join us. Shelley is the CEO and founder of Bright Star Care. It was founded in 2002 and expanded through franchising in 2005. Today, Bright Star has grown to over 335 locations, represented by over 200 small businesses. I remember watching Shelley receive the IFA 2009 Entrepreneur of the Year Award at the convention, and she has continued to literally take the business world by storm ever since. She has been recognized for her leadership with many awards over the years in both franchising and the home care industry, and there are just too many to name, quite frankly, and I know that she is so proud of. But I do recognize and notice that she did receive the Entrepreneur of the Year by the University of Tennessee's Haslam College of Business, which is her alma mater. And even though she is a Tennessee grad, and I'm a Gator grad, we get along just great. She was also recognized as the top 50 fastest growing women-owned, women-led companies by Women's Presidents Organization, a Global Franchise Magazine's 20 Faces of Franchising, and Franchise Dictionary's 50 Most Influential Women in Franchising, and the list goes on. She has served mightily over the years to further the franchise business model and the home care industry. She served as the 2017 and 18 chairwoman of the IFA and currently serves with me on the Home Care Association of America's Board of Directors. She is a force of nature in Washington, D.C., and has worked tirelessly on many advocacy efforts that benefit both small businesses and the home care industry. She's a published author with the book Grow Smart, Risk Less, and was featured on Undercover Boss. And while there's so much more I could share, I know Shelley is most proud of her role as a mother for her two boys. And so welcome, Shelley, and I'm looking forward to the conversation today.
Thanks, Emma.
So let's get started. In getting to know you recently, I've discovered that we have a few things in common, including why you founded Bright Start Care. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, absolutely. I was looking for care for my grandmother in late 2001 while I was going through the ranks of corporate America, and had a very difficult time finding high quality care for her at a remote distance. She lived in Florida, I lived in Illinois, and going through for the family, trying to screen through a bunch of agencies, there wasn't one that could do everything that she needed and offer that full continuum of care. Went through many, many agencies over a 4-month period of time. Lost her to cancer a couple of days before I got married in early 02. And the next 6 months really, you know, kind of questioned my life, and looking in the rearview mirror as an accountant about the impact I could make over the rest of my career, and felt like it was kind of a calling that there were many families like ours that were looking for a high quality home care opportunity for a loved one, and were willing to pay a slight premium so that the employees could be paid more and there could be a higher level of care. And that kind of started the journey of Bright Star Care that started within 7 months of that.
Like you, I joined Home Helpers, my grandmother. We cared for her at home for 18 years before she passed away. And we were very fortunate. I had a really good experience. My family did, but I know that's not always the case.
Yeah.
And so I find that we really do get in this business to make things better.
Absolutely.
So in those early days, what were your biggest challenges when you started Bright Star?
I think it probably is the same for our franchisees today, you know, balancing the what comes first, chicken or the egg, the number of clients, number of caregivers, and always trying to have a balance between those two. I think it was also trying to get the credibility as a woman leader accessing financing for the business, home care, almost more so than any other business, the faster you grow, almost the most more stress you take on, because it's a really accounts receivable based business. And so you are very glad and honored to have the chance to help families, but you recognize you're going to be paying the payroll that just increased for maybe weeks before you wind up getting paid. And so access to financing is really a necessity of growth. And that's hard. And I think it generally is harder for women to access financing. And that was true in the early stages in particular until, you know, had experience, you know, in the business, had a little bit more predictability on accounts receivable. Fortunate to have good lenders now. But in the early stages, it was really stressful, and you know, it never grows at the pace that you hope it's going to grow. While we grew quickly, I had several weeks where I had to believe in myself and believe in the business and put payroll on a credit card, knowing I needed to continue to honor my commitment to the amazing caregivers that were working for us every single day. And had to trust that the business that we were bringing in was going to pay. You know, if we had had key customers that hadn't paid their bills, that would have been a really, really, really tough go. But as it was, I mean, we took lots of leaps of faith in those early days.
I remember reading an interview that you did about your first client and how you continued to care for him for years. And that really struck me because it really is our business. It's such a people-related business, and it's one that has a strong mission, yet it's still a profitable business that you have all of the, you know, nuances of making payroll and paying taxes and hiring in advance and so many of those things that are a challenge always, and certainly when you have a new business. So what are your challenges now? I mean, you've been franchising for, you know, 15 years now.
I think it's, you know, trying to make sure that we have the right executive leadership team. I mean, over the last year, you know, I've really put a lot of focus on what did we need. We are, you know, $500 million in annual sales now. And so looking to double that over the next 5 years, you know, what's the team that I'm going to need to be able to do that, right? The cliche, there's no I in team, but it's really true. And so the last year has been really intentional, bringing in new talent, new energy, new thought. And it's the strongest leadership team I've ever had. But getting to the point of being able to find that team was a challenge. Now solid. Now I'd say it's also, you know, making sure that we've got the right caregiver growth and are attracting people to the honor of taking care of families each and every day. There's, you know, everything that we know, right? There's not going to be any shortage of those that want to stay at home. And, you know, going through a pandemic, I mean, shows that even more about, you know, how much people need to stay home. But making sure that we have the access to the caregivers, essential to be able to make sure we can care for the moms and dads, grandmas and grandpas every single day, for the brand and at the franchisee level, I think for the next decade will be a challenge that has to have as much thought as two decades ago was educating consumers that they could stay at home and have a choice as to where they received care. Now it's, I don't want to say it's easy to get customers, but it's easier to get families that want the care and understand why it's valuable. Now it's about bringing people to our industry that might not have thought about a caregiving path in life. And hopefully we get an opportunity, you know, with everything we've all lived through, you know, we've all had to remain, you know, 100% open all the way through a pandemic, right? And so if you have a choice of where you're going to work, being able to be of service and making a huge difference in people's lives, my hope is that what was a challenge 4 months ago, finding talent, potentially becomes easier in the years ahead. I was just on a call with someone from ZipRecruiter that went through that a large percentage of those coming to the home care industry in just the last 6 to 8 weeks, 15% of them were coming from hospitality with a complete career change aspiration. And I think that's both because what we get to do feels good every single day, but also is, you know, really recession-proof. There's always going to be a need, and I think that our model has been able to demonstrate that in the last few months.
Yeah, in the last economic recession, which was economic-driven, of course, not health crisis-driven, you know, I looked back at our business, and because I had just joined Home Helpers at the time, and we were up, you know, huge double-digit growth because the need is still going to be there. And I think that as we have been able to educate from the industry, being able, you know, we now search everything online. And so it is more understood that there are services available in the home, which I think is interesting. You mentioned your leadership team, and I read that you had read the book Traction and had really made that a part of the tapestry for Bright Start. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I'm sure that influenced how you've put your leadership team together.
Yeah, very much. So Gina Wickman actually became a friend. He's the author of Traction, and his integrator in his own business was Don Tenney. And so I reached out to Don, and after him telling me no a few times, he didn't take on clients directly, I wore him down, and we're the dearest of friends now. That doesn't surprise you probably at all, but... but he wound up being our implementer and has been since 2013. So we've been using Don in our business for, you know, 7 years as we've made, you know, iterations in the team and grown as an organization. He's been really helpful for me to see my blind spots and work past my heart for what the business needs. You know, some of my biggest strengths and biggest weaknesses. Biggest strengths will be, you know, tenacity, resilience. I love people. I love making a difference. I'm passionate about what we do. So I can do it 24/7. And I think that served me well during a crisis. But the other side is I love people so much. I am slow to fire or make changes. And Don has been really good to hold up that mirror as to, while it might feel good at the time, you're not doing yourself or the business or your franchisees any favors to not make this move. And so having Traction, a really an objective way to assess talent, not that they're not great people, but they might no longer be the people we need for the stage we become. And I've gotten more of that understanding from implementing Traction. So, you know, we've all, you know, read many books, you know, Good to Great or whatever kind of tools and balanced scorecard, you know, this, that, and the other. But I think it really gave us a common language for our leadership team. And then we took it out to franchisees as well. I paid for 24 franchisees to implement, everyone that did a business case for me and wrote it up and what they would do with it. I paid for 24 of them to go through an on-site implementation of the Traction's Entrepreneurial Operating System, or EOS. And it has made a huge difference in our coaching ability and us all being aligned on core values and key performance indicators and priorities across the organization. So it's been helpful for my team, but I think the biggest lift came once I got all the franchisees on the same page with Traction.
Yeah, I found that very interesting. And by the way, no, I don't think anyone could say that you are not passionate and tenacious. You and I, during this pandemic, have exchanged emails very late into the night and early in the morning, as so many of us, because as you mentioned, in our business, all of our agencies have been open and hiring and taking care of clients and help flatten that curve. So that leads me to you yourself are a published author with Grow Smart and Risk Less. So what drove you to write that book and others?
Yeah, no, so I knew I was going to be featured on Undercover Boss, and I knew that probably would awaken a lot of entrepreneurs to the growth that could be experienced through franchising, and that it's very hard for me to say no. I want to help others. It's just a matter of trying to balance being a mom and being a business owner that doesn't allow me to help everyone who might reach out. And so my way of going about that was, what if I publish a book on, is your business franchisable? And if it is franchisable, what are the steps that you take? Who are the vendors you might screen? All the things that I did, my organizational charts for the first 5 years, what did I do well? What didn't I do well? What were the KPIs for the business? All of them for the first 5 years, very open book. I think some of my competitors, you weren't at the time, but I think some of my competitors were shocked that I would publish that book. And while you were, I mean, many of our fellow friends slash competitors were very surprised. But for me, it was just a way to transparently share. And to me, it's about the passion, the tenacity, and the business model execution. None of us have usually had an original idea. We've borrowed, copied, repackaged, a lot of things that have been out there. And so I didn't feel like I was really giving anything away, but I felt like the thousands that might have reached out, I could actually handle if I said, look, I'm willing to help, but I need you to read the book first. And if whatever questions you have after you read the book, and like many things in life, like mentoring, if you put it to the mentee that they have to come with an agenda, most won't follow through, sadly. And so I'm willing to take on, I mean, usually in a year, I take on 50 mentees for one or two conversations to help them through a set of questions at IFA. I'm stacked, seven deep trying to do all those conversations while I'm there. But if someone will actually invest the time, I'll help. And so the book for me was in some ways self-preservation and paying it forward to share everything I knew at that stage, that if people were willing to take that and put it into practice, then I could help take on what I believe to be a small funnel of those that would actually do the work and then come with a prepared agenda of questions. And it was true. All the money's gone to franchising. I've given out thousands of the books to different franchising events, just wanting to be part of the solution, because I think there are good ways to do franchising. I think there's bad ways to do franchising, and franchising's better when we all do it for the sake of franchisees and the brand being sustainable at the best way. And the book was kind of part of that. A very boring read, but methodically laying out everything we've done, good and bad.
One of the things that I've admired about you over the years is that you are so giving of your experience and expertise. Whether that's been through your book, or a most recent example I can think of with the IFA is all of the work you did around FASB. And I remember you walking into the convention this year, and there was a session that was specific to that piece, and you laid a stack. I mean, it was probably this thick on the table and said, I'll share this is all that we've done, and I'll share it with anyone. And competitor, no competitor, it truly was about paying it forward, which I think you've just been incredible with. And so as you think about successful leaders, we can all point to great mentors, and I know you've had some terrific ones, and as they paid it forward with you, now you're paying it forward with so many others. Tell me a little bit about your mentors.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've evolved. Those that were mentors early are still dearest of friends now. So maybe I'll, just because the topic and the nature of the women's aspect of the WFC is, when I was first beginning my business and knew that I was going to franchise, I was setting up my first advisory board. And I just sent out a note to my entire network and said, I wanted either Gloria Jean of Gloria Jean's Coffee or Seattle Sutton to be on my board, because they had scaled through franchising or licensing, and they were moms raising younger kids during the height of their business success. And I know how hard that can be on the heart, that you care so much about the business, but these are my children in Hawaii have to get off to in the right way for the rest of their lives. And there's always that pull between both. And I didn't believe anyone could truly help me address both better than a woman who had been through it. And there's not that many female founders. And so I was blessed that I was a Women President's Organization member. And one of my 20 in my group, my forum, Nancy Sharp, was childhood friends with Gloria Jean. And she connected the two of us. And Gloria agreed to meet for breakfast. And we hit it off instantly. And we were just texting yesterday, actually. And we still get together, you know, about every 3 months. She was on my board for probably my first 5 years of my advisory boards. And then my advisory board has changed 3 or 4 times. But she's always remained a very dear friend. And subjects that I don't necessarily talk about at my board meeting anymore in terms of trying to balance being a mom, a woman, and an entrepreneur, Gloria gets, and it's always been a good sounding board for me. And then I've been blessed, you know, as I've been involved with the IFA, you know, David Barr, who was immediate past chair of the IFA, and I'd seen him challenge in a respectful way in the boardroom, and I wanted to be challenged like that. I didn't know what the future of Bright Star was going to be, but I knew if I was going to grow as a leader, my team might not be challenging me as much as I needed to be challenged, and I wanted that. I still own 100% of my company, so I don't have a external voting board, but I wanted a board that operated just as strongly and held me just as accountable. So David was my first board member. Sid Feltenstein was my second one that I approached. He turned me down, but David got him to say yes. And Sid is really, I mean, he's great, and he's great at the marketing. David's really great at the finance, so they were a great compliment. And then I'm a Young President's Organization member, YPO, and it is an amazing experience. So, you know, tons of my friends in YPO are so much more accomplished, so they are mentors as well. And I go to Harvard every year for a YPO HBS partnership that's been in place for decades. And I got really close to my favorite Harvard professor, Boris Groysberg, and he did my case study because he's got daughters. And he felt, at the time, he said, you know, I'd really like to do your case study. And I said, what's inspiring you? He says, 54% of our graduate students are women. 9% of our protagonists are women. He says, I think we should all be seeking out women to create examples for the girls, the women who will be the future or should be the future of this country. And so I was honored, and it was a really great perspective, and, you know, met the family, and Lilia, his wife, is wonderful. And so we finished the case, and I asked Boris, you know, how could we maybe work together? And he said, what do you have in mind? I said, I'd love if you were on my board. And they only get a chance to be on 3 external boards at Harvard. And so he had to wind down one board that he felt like he'd contributed to enough and join my board. And he's an amazing person. He gives me access to a lot of data to help frame my decisions and my thinking. He challenges me to think a lot further than what I was thinking before he joined. But he's also a total mensch. I mean, he calls and checks on me or emails or text all the time, just knowing, you know, kind of what I've had on my shoulders and being a single mom and one of my sons has special needs. And so, I mean, you know, he's really great and patient with Luke. We've had issues, you know, with Luke over the years with, you know, suicide attempt. And he offered to have Luke come stay with them, he and Lilia, for a while, just as, you know, I tried to get my arms around everything that was going on. And I didn't take him up on it, but the fact that he offered and he was sincere, he's not only brilliant, he's got a huge heart. And I would say that's true of all of my board members. I've since got to add a woman, and I was so excited about that. Sid Feltenstein serves on the board with Pam Parisian, who is the CIO of all of AT&T, and asked Pam if she would join my board, knowing that I wanted a technologist on my board, but it would also be great to have a woman. And Pam has been a great addition. So a mighty board of 4 plus me, but great mentors and friends. And they're really astute and empathetic, I think, at understanding when I need one or the other, when I'm ready to be pushed, and when I just need some reassurance that I'm doing the right things, given where they read my stress is at a given point in time, based upon whether during the pandemic, it was a lot of support, not a lot of pushing. When we were at our all-time highest growth pre-pandemic, interestingly, in the 4 weeks leading up to the pandemic, our highest level of success and growth, they were pushing. And so it's been really amazing that they don't take a one-size-fits-all for me as a person and me as a leader. So I've been very, very blessed.
Yeah, you know, I when I joined Home Helpers, I read Sid's book at the time that he had out. It was called Change is Good, You Go First. I don't know if you ever saw that. Yeah. It's this thick. It's the quickest read, but there was a quote in there that I still live by today. It says, if you don't like change, you'll like irrelevance a lot less. And that's where I talk about, as a company, you have to have a spirit of innovation. And you certainly have done that throughout your time at BrightStar. So I'm just curious too, you know, we've all worked for some really inspiring bosses in our career. And certainly now you are your own boss. But, you know, however, I feel like sometimes you learn more from someone who may not have been as inspiring. So was there anyone like that in your career that you could point to that really kind of helped develop you as a person and as a leader for maybe some things that you don't do?
And I said, sadly, being in accounting, they're not great at personnel development or, you know, extroverted type personalities to think of the whole. In all of my years, Wyndham Kidd was the CFO at Blue Cross Blue Shield, was my best boss. He let me spread my wings and take on things knowing that I wanted to do more and I would give more, let me move from finance to operations. But across the rest of my career, I haven't had another that I've wanted to stay and run through walls for other than Wyndham. And I'd say that probably the biggest common denominator, and it's one I've learned as a leader in my own business, is when you have star performers, you've got to find challenges or projects to let them expand and show what they can do. Because if you don't empower them to change the status quo, to make things better and build in capacity so they can do more, they will leave. And that was true for me when I was in corporate America, is if I was told to keep doing it the same way it had always been done, you could get anyone to do that job. What I would bring is a spirit of innovation and making change and making it better, and then ask to take on more and more and more so I could keep developing. And if I couldn't find an environment that would allow me to keep expanding, I would move. And so I really have tried to be cognizant of that with, you know, cross-functional teams within our organization, or bringing in Boris Groysberg to develop our people. I send leaders to Harvard for executive ed. I really try to challenge and invest intentionally in our people, because I know if I don't, my best people, which is almost everyone in my organization now, will leave. And, you know, we've got a real great chance to see how resourceful people can be during the pandemic. I mean, it's been kind of the hidden opportunity of, I'm a hugger, as you well know. You know, it's going to be a while since I get to hug, but they found me a hugging wall that they're installing in my office so I can go through the plastic and be able to hug, because I really need my hugs, but I have to do it safely. So we're installing a few of those in our corporate headquarters. I said, I'm not coming back without a hugging wall. I saw one. I'm like, I want one. But, you know, making sure that we could have a way to invest in our people to help them go beyond what they might have thought possible. I really want to make sure with intentionality, all layers of our organization is intentionally putting out a development plan, because everyone, including me, can be better. And so part of our review process is an intentional development plan that we fund to make sure we can help people keep rising to the occasion. And we saw it, you know, during the pandemic. I mean, going virtual, our organization has remained, and I'm sure you too, just completely productive. And I'm pretty old school. So I, being a hugger, I wanted everybody in the same office environment. And I've seen that, you know, people really enjoy working from home and they're really productive. I think it will change our views in the months ahead from a headquarters perspective. Is that 2 or 3 days a week where we're bringing different folks together for meetings and being more flexible? And does that change how much office space we need, where we could take those same dollars and put it more into support going forward? I think it's just really interesting to see when you've got great people, they stay productive. They don't need to be in a real estate setting to do that. And they find new things to do, all the virtual hiring that everybody's doing. I mean, people have just really thought outside the box quickly. I mean, what would have taken us 3 years got done in 3 months, you know, virtual care, telehealth. I mean, all these things that everybody like had on the next year or two project plan, like all of a sudden they all happened all at once, right?
Yeah, they did. And, you know, we're finding the same thing. As you look back over the last 3 months, I do think it's going to look differently. Like you, I mean, I've been in remote work environments since 1997, where I had an office in my home and I traveled some and, you know, went into headquarters every now and then in Dallas or Baltimore. We have been so productive through this, and it is, our staff is really happy. They're doing great work. It will look different. And like you were figuring out, you know, we've thought about dividing everybody on odd and even teams. And so if you're on the even team, today's the 8th, you could come into the office. If you're on an odd team, tomorrow's the 9th, then you can come into the office. And then understanding there's going to be a time when we all need to be here. Yeah. You know, so we'll see what that looks. So you mentioned a little bit being old school, and I'm a little bit older than you are. And our professional careers have largely been in male-dominated fields. And although there has been great progress in the last few decades, there certainly has been. You know, I know you're very passionate about women entrepreneurs and helping women get ahead in careers, whether it's in corporate America or through a franchising business model. And franchising has certainly been a great platform to do that. What advice would you give young women today to be successful, whether they're starting out in a corporate profession or franchising? And would it be different potentially?
Yeah, I think believing in yourself, having the tenacity to not take no for an answer. It's still not 100% supportive of, my mom gave me a t-shirt when I was young, everything boys can do, girls can do better. And so, you know, I've tried to keep the, that mantra to myself in terms of not seeing anything as impossible. And I think we need to give that kind of environment and that mentality, to our young female leaders. I think franchising in some ways is easier than other areas from the standpoint of, you can set your own professional development path in franchising a little bit easier with a certified franchise executive program. And I think it does separate executives or young leaders one from another, those that have it and those that don't. And you're not having to wait for someone to give you that knowledge. It's something that you could seek out on your own. I did as a very early franchisor. I immediately got CFE. I learned a ton. I wanted to be a student. I wanted to learn franchising. And so I think franchising is a great path. I think for those that are looking at, you know, coming up through the ranks and maybe thinking about franchising as a path as a young entrepreneur, don't underestimate how much financing you're going to need and how expensive it can be. For me, that means like having enough money to get through 50 to 75 units, and having it early. In some ways, it's easier to get money before you need it. So get more than what you need and then pay it back if you don't, I think is really important. And so I am very active in mentoring both genders, but I tend to really make time for, because there's not as many women reaching out to try to help them. And then on personal, you know, fronts as well, I think there's just recognition that our women will face more obstacles potentially in their lives. And I do a lot to donate to and spend time with abuse charities. And 1 in 4 women will be sexually abused in their lifetime. And I don't think any of us have been through a situation in our careers where we know we did as good of a job or better than a man, and a man got the promotion. When I was at CNA Insurance, my boss, who was male, would take all of my male peers to lunch almost every single day, and I was specifically not invited. So I think it's important to seek out mentors that really, truly are inclusive or are women, to make sure that the path is set and supported to reach the potential, and then seek the strength and support and resilience of self, whether that's, you know, self-defense training with Krav Maga or things like that. Because I think it's about having the confidence as well, because not every day is a supportive day as a woman. And so having outside support that's encouraging us on, I think, is really important. Surrounding yourself with other strong women. I've really enjoyed it. Our time, start more intensely in January, and we talk all the time now. I think surrounding yourself with great women, I think, is really important. Catherine Munson and I are the dearest of friends, and it's great having, and Tam Kennedy from Franchisee and Franchisor, you know, having really strong women around you. And we all have capacity to help more young women have those strong women around there. And I think that's part of what you're doing, what WFC is doing, and what all of us as women need to do. Women still aren't paid as much as men. They often do, more work. They're trying to juggle being typically the primary parent on bad cop on homework and taking a shower. I've got twin 15-year-old boys. I don't know what was harder, going through virtual school and making them like sign on and do their homework, or making them take a shower every day. So I'm at the fun stage of both. So I mean, it's not easy. Maybe we're the stronger gender for a reason. Maybe there's a reason men don't give birth. But it does take strong women helping other strong women, because there will be challenges and there will be tough days. I would say I've developed to a point where I tend to have a lot of very strong, supportive men around me. But as we both know, that takes time. And it takes understanding and learning and inclusiveness, and not everyone in the country is ready for that.
No, they're not. I can remember early in my career, the company I was with, which was a large company at the time, and they were growing like wildfire. I worked for the most uninspiring boss I had. There was a position open, though, that I applied for that still would have been under his leadership, but it would have been a promotion. And I remember the HR manager actually came to me. And by the way, I was the only female that worked for him. I was one of only two that did my job in the whole country, two women in the whole country. And he actually told the HR manager that he was concerned about promoting me because I was a single mother. And would I have the availability to do the job that needed to be done? And I did get the promotion, to be fair. I did get the promotion. His concerns, though, weren't that I could do the job. It was the fact that I was a single mother.
Yep.
And would I be able to?
Yeah.
At that time. And that was just an awakening for me to know that I was always going to have to work harder. I was going to have to be more nurturing. I was going to have to be firm. I was going to have to be fair. All those characteristics and look to good leaders. And that's where, quite frankly, the IFA came in. I was much younger at the time to be able to kind of bridge some of that for me.
Yeah.
It's really odd and unfortunate, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yep.
So I know family is really important to you. We have both been single mothers, and family helps shape who we are one way or the other. So if you could look back now at young Shelley, 8-year-old, 10-year-old, 15-year-old Shelley, and there was some defining moment, what would you tell that young girl now, having the benefit of knowledge?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think my mom buying me that t-shirt of anything boys can do, girls could do better was a defining moment. And I think I probably have come more away from childhood with something to prove versus a positive experience. My dad was a workaholic, but I'm an only child. He wanted a son. And I probably heard hundreds, if not thousands of times that he wished I had been a son. And so I felt like I had something to prove that even as a woman, I could be accomplished and do great things. And so I think that's, you know, sometimes accomplishment comes from seeing a great path. And sometimes it comes from having someone say that you'll never do it. Mine was the latter.
Well, I would say today, anyone who knows you, family, friend, your clients, their families, anyone who knows or Google Shelly Sun will see what an accomplished woman that you are. And as I said in the intro, what a true force you have been in the business world and certainly in franchising.
Thank you, Emma.
Another thing we have in common is we've both been single mothers. Your boys, as I mentioned, have been the most important to you. This business of trying to balance the business and your family, your boys, and they bring you true joy. So how do you, can you give women some advice on how do you achieve that balance?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's something that, you know, everybody talks about getting balance. And for me, I gave up a long time ago being able to balance. I just thought it was a bar that put so much pressure on me as a mom, me as a woman, me as an entrepreneur. And you don't hear about men having to try to find the balance. So, you know, I gave myself permission that on any given day, I might get two of the three great: mom, woman, entrepreneur. And by, I mean, woman, like friend and daughter and all the things that, you know, make up my life, working out, all those things that, you know, make up a holistic life. But I'm not going to get all three perfect every single day. But over a month, I will do my best at making sure I'm a good mother, I'm taking care of myself and a good friend, and I'm a good entrepreneur. But it's over a longer period of time. And I think that would be my biggest advice to any of us as women. That's an impossible metric society sets for us, that we have to be superwoman and do all three great every single day. No one else is asked to. Why ask it of ourselves and then feel guilty when we don't? So I think it was trying to look across a longer period of time and fit in time for some workouts across the month, fit in some times with friends, you know, across the month of the days that my boys are with their dad, and fit in, you know, intentional quality time with my boys. And then obviously you've got, you know, key work things that are built in there. But I take a longer term view, not a daily view. When I used to take a daily view, I felt almost daily, I felt guilty because in some way I hadn't been a great entrepreneur, a great mom, at the time maybe a great wife. On a given day, I hadn't worked out, you know, I was tired. But over a longer period of time, I think that's a more fair bar and standard that I actually feel like as people, fathers, mothers, society can live up to. But a daily measurement of ourselves and society having on us, I think is too much.
It is. And I saw it in January. I saw a piece on the Today Show. I was a single mom from the time Alexis was 9 months old. And so it was always this balance for me as it is for any parents today. But I remember seeing in January a study that was done that showed that for those families that have, you know, mom and dad in the home, that no matter, and both worked full time, no matter who was the breadwinner, how many hours they worked, that women had, when they got home at the end of every workday, they had another 2.5 to 3 hours of responsibility beyond what their spouse or life partner or, you know, significant other, whatever would be. And that really hit home for me. It is so true. And there was this constant reality of guilt for me as well. I'm just curious because as you think about it, I asked my daughter this question too. Was there a time that you really felt guilty about something that you couldn't do with the boys, or there was some event you couldn't be there for, and your boys told you, you know, Mom, it's okay. You're here. You're present with us all the time. It's okay. Have you ever had anything like that?
I think it was probably sixth, maybe seventh grade. They just finished their freshman year now. And they had a band concert that hadn't been planned far enough in advance. And I already had an out of town event, like an IFA convention, I think. And I think it was actually my chair year. And so I couldn't be at their band concert and be at IFA convention. And I had to miss it. And they both had practiced so hard and I felt so guilty and felt so bad. But they were very sweet about it when I got home, and I'm so sorry I missed it. Will you play it for me, you know, again? And they're like, Mom, it's okay. You're doing so much. You're helping so many people. And that really helped. I think the best moment I've had, and if you haven't done it and can do it, with your daughter, with my boys, I took them the first skilled client I had, you asked about earlier. And Tim was a client of mine from 2002 to 2019. He just passed away Labor Day. And, you know, God is good because he gave me this idea that I really needed to take my boys to see firsthand what I did. And I have always been really close to Tim and his wife, Ann, which we'll show in just 1 second. But I took them Labor Day 1 year to the day before Tim passed away to go visit Tim. And we're in his home and, you know, Tim's a quadriplegic. And Tim said to both my boys, if it wasn't for your mom, I wouldn't have gotten to see my grandchildren born. I had many agencies before your mom, and your mom's the only one who's kept me out of the hospital. And I've lived 10 years past when I was supposed to, and that's because of your mom. And they finally got to see what I did, that it was making such a difference in people's lives, like truly, that they saw me, and they have seen me since, in a very different light. 1 year later, when Tim passed away, his wife, Ann, asked me to deliver the eulogy. And I've never been given a greater honor. Now I cried like 3 days leading up to it. And I'd been crying since the day that he passed away. I still remember where I was when he passed away. And I bawled like a baby because they had become such a huge part of my life. But having my boys get a chance to go see what I did, what the business is really about, was really special. And I think that's a really, you know, they always say, kind of take your kid to work day. It was really the first time, because, you know, we have HIPAA and all those kind of things with home care. So I had to get, you know, permission, which they were like, oh, please bring the boys. They'd seen pictures of the boys, you know, the whole time growing up. My first gift, I was in the NICU, the boys were delivered high risk. And my first present for me giving birth was from Tim and Ann, even before both sets of grandparents, and it was going to be the only grandchildren. You know, I'd gotten very, 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 very close to them over the years, but it was very reciprocal. You know, we were part of each other's lives, and having my boys see that, I think it's helped a lot with guilt when I have to do something for work. Like, you're helping people have care like Tim, right, Mom? And that's been helpful to set that in perspective.
You know, it truly does. I got an email today from a client that we've cared for, well, from the son and daughter. And to start your Monday off in that way is just wonderful because you see such an impact that you have with all over the country, and that you get to just have this wonderful, you know, mission that continues to be so valuable for so many families. So I want to kind of end this with a little bit of a rapid fire with you.
Okay.
Got five questions and just whatever comes to mind for you. So when you do actually get an evening to relax or have some fun, what's your idea of the best way to do that?
With boys, cooking fried chicken, because I'm a Southern Belle and it's my boys' favorite food. If I don't have the boys, it's entertaining with great food and wine with friends.
Okay. What's your guiltiest pleasure?
Shoes.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me because you have some amazing shoes. So when you and the boys go on vacation, do you all like to do mountains or water?
Probably half and half, water relaxed and half adventuresome. So whether that's mountains or some kind of really heavy activity type of trip.
Yeah, I've noticed you all do a lot of great hiking.
Yes.
Which is awesome. So what's your biggest pet peeve?
People that give me an answer just to give an answer and they don't know whether it's right or not and haven't done their research. I'd rather have someone say, I don't have the answer, but I'll get it for you and here's when, than give me an answer that I rely on and it wasn't factual.
Yeah, agreed. So what's your hidden talent?
Wow, hidden talent. I can't sing, so it's not that. I mean, I do love to cook, and I am a really good cook and entertainer. I had 3 days in a row, I think in February or March, where Angelo from Littler and Will Vale from Littler were at my house for dinner. So I did pot roast on Tuesday night for a group of six. I entertained another group on the next night for 12. And then our marketing agencies were there on Thursday night and it was a group of 20. And I did all the cooking myself. So being able to kind of time that many dishes and cook everything, but I enjoy it. I thrive on being able to show love through food.
Well, next time I'm in Chicago, if you're there, please. I may have to ask you to
love to
great cooking because, like you, I'm Southern at heart. South, and there's nothing
if only weren't a gator.
Well, you know, we'll just have to figure out a way to overcome that. Because there is nothing like sitting down in the South and sharing a meal. There is.
It's true.
So, as parting, any last words of wisdom that you would share with our audience?
Mine would be there is always a willingness for mentoring and advisors, even if it's not more formal. Ask for help. And I think people are willing to help and pay it forward. You know, I was shocked at the people who said yes, but I would not be the leader that I have become. And I have a long way to go without those who have invested to make me better. And I know, like you, you know, we're very invested in helping the next generation be our future leader. So, you know, ask for and take that willingness to help be all that we can be.
Well, thank you, Shelley. I am so grateful for your time.
My pleasure.
You are, and can't wait to share this with our audience. And just thank you so much. And you and I'll catch up again real soon.
It just sounds good. Sounds good. Thanks, Emma.
Thanks, Shelley. Have a good day.
You too. Bye, Annie.